turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is, in fact, the pretty much the middle of the book of Deuteronomy, or Devarim, the final of the five books of the Torah, and probably the best summary, of course. And it begins this way this week in chapter 11. Let me make double sure that that's correct. But yes, chapter 11, verse 26. First word, of course, and this is where the parsha is named for, is Re'eh. Well, behold, hey, check it out, see? I have set before you this day a blessing and a curse. And the blessing, and this is one of those that I always spend a minute or two on, because it's interesting, there's some Rashiisms associated with this, and I think they're important. Some English renderings say the blessing if, but it's not really if. It does not say im, the Hebrew word that's usually rendered as if. It's more like the blessing that, or because. In other words, the blessing follows, not if, it just comes. The blessing that you shall hearken unto the commandments of Yehoyarel, which I command you to this day. So the condition is up front. In other words, you get the blessing right off the bat, kind of by default. Now the key is, the curse is if, im, lo, tishmal, tishmau, it's the yaw form of shema in the future tense. So the curse comes if you do not shamar, hearken, under the commandments of Yehoyarel, but turn aside out of the way which I command you this day to go after other gods, fake Elohim, which you have not known. So the reason why the distinction is important, and this is the real point that I think is so valuable to understand about the way our Creator works, you get the blessing right off the top. The blessing happens because the presumption is you're going to walk in obedience. It's only if you do not, and he knows it and sees it and you can't deny it, that the curse comes. So that is indeed an important distinction. The default case is the blessing. So it shall come to pass, when Yehoyarel shall bring you into the land that you're going in to possess it, that you shall set the blessing upon Mount Gerizim, and the curse upon Mount Ebal. So you got these twin peaks, and essentially blessings on one, cursings on the other. Are they not beyond the Jordan, behind the way of the sun going down, in the land of the Canaanites that dwell in the Arabah, over against Gilgal, beside the terebinths of Moreh? For you are going to pass over the Jordan to go and to possess the land which Yehoyarel gives you, and you shall possess it and dwell therein. And he says, you shall observe to do all the statutes and the ordinances which I set before you this day. Now then it says, here we go, these are Allah, Ha-Hukim, the statutes, those are the do them because I tell you to, and the ordinances which you shall observe to do in the land which Yehoyarel and the El of your fathers has given you to go possess it, all the days that you live upon the earth. And here we go. This is another one of those places where we see the peel conjugation. These are action verbs in the most vigorous sense of the way a word can be conjugated. You shall utterly destroy all the places wherein these nations have worshipped, that you're going to dispossess, have worshipped their Elohim. Now, it's interesting. The word there, the nations, is goyim. So in some places, you'll see it translated as Gentiles or pagans. At this point, these are in fact very pagan nations, which is why they're being dispossessed. So I guess this is one of the places where they could have translated it as Gentiles, and they get destroyed, but that's not what the translators decided to do. So I usually point out that word because it's kind of fascinating how sometimes the connotation is correct, other times they blow it. But this one's not bad. Again, it's just that the real clear connotation is here, these are pagan nations. That's why they are being kicked out, and you're going to destroy them. Destroy the places, though, too, where they have served their fake gods, on the high mountains, upon the hills, under every leaf or green tree. And, here we go, more peel conjugation. You shall break down, smash in smithereens their altars, dash in pieces, again, their pillars, burn their asherim with fire, and you shall hew down the graven images of their Elohim, that you shall destroy their name out of that place. Nope. What they do, you shall not do unto Yahuwah your El. And again, the reason why this is fascinating is because not just of the vociferous nature, the action-oriented, let's not leave any doubt here, conjugation of the verbs. It's the fact that now that we've been told by the whore church that, well, we do this. We ask how do they worship their gods. We do likewise. We Christianize them. We put a veneer of wonderfulness on the paganism. And we claim that the Old Testament is done away with just in case there's any question, because he says pretty clearly, you shall not do so unto Yehoiarel. But the place which Yehoiarel shall choose to put out of all of his tribes, his name, that is where you shall seek his habitation. And thither you shall come. And that's where you will bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices and your tithes, the offerings of your hand, your vows, your freewill offerings, the firstlings of your herd and of your flock. And you shall eat before Yehoiarel, and you shall rejoice in all that you put your hand to, you and your households, wherein Yehoiarel has blessed you. Now, this is another one of those fascinating things. I actually went through and highlighted all the places where you see this word here, which is Semach, Semeach, the root word Simcha. There are a lot of ways of conjugating it. It can be a noun or it can be a verb. Here it's generally used as a verb, and it means rejoice, or to be joyful, or just joy in some cases in the noun form. But the key, right? Simcha Torah, the joy of Torah. We can recognize the word. It shows up a lot. But in this Torah portion, it shows up right here seven times. One form or another of Simcha. But generally, it's rejoice. It's a commandment. You shall not do, after all that we do here this day, every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. And of course, we recognize that phrase exactly shows up again in Joshua, because it's an indictment. You're not as yet come into the rest and your inheritance, which Yehoiarel is going to give you. It's ahead. But when you go over the Jordan and dwell in the land which Yehoiarel is going to cause you to inherit, and he gives you that rest from all your enemies round about, so that you dwell in safety, then it shall come to pass that the place where Yehoiarel shall cause to choose to have his name dwell there, that's the place. Thither you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the offerings of your hand, and all your choice vows which you vow unto Yehoah. And you shall, here it is, rejoice before Yehoiarel, you and your sons, your daughters, your manservants, your maidservants, and the Levites that's within your gates, because, you know, he doesn't have any portion nor inheritance with you. The fact that he's a Levite, and that's his inheritance, he belongs to Yehoah, is what's key for them. Take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offerings in every place that you lay eyes on, every place you see, but only in the place which Yehoiarel shall choose in one of your tribes. In other words, in one of the lands of these 12 tribes. And there you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command you. Notwithstanding, you might kill and eat flesh within all your gates after the desire of your soul, according to the blessing of Yehoiarel, which he's given you. The unclean and the clean, they may both eat of it, as of the gazelle and as of the hart. Only you shall not eat the blood. He has repeated this. He's going to continue to repeat it. You shall not eat the blood. You pour it out upon the earth like it was water. You may not eat within your gates the tithe of your corn, or of your wine, or your oil, or the firstlings of your herd, or your flock, or any of the vows which you vow, nor your freewill offerings, nor the offering of your hand. But those, he says, you shall eat them before Yehoiarel in the place which Yehoah shall choose. You, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite within your gates. And here it is one more time. You shall rejoice before Yehoiarel in all that you put your hand to. Take heed to yourself that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live upon the land. Now, when Yehoiarel shall enlarge your border, as he's promised you, and you end up saying, hey, I'd like to have some flesh. Oh, I would love to eat flesh because your soul desires to eat flesh. Well, you can do that. You may eat flesh after all the desire of your soul, your nefesh. Now, if the place which Yehoiarel shall choose to put his name is too far from you, then you shall kill of your herd and of your flock, which Yehoah has given you, as I've commanded you, and you shall eat within your gates after all the desire of your soul. However, as the gazelle and as the hart is eaten, so shall you eat thereof, the clean and the unclean alike, they can eat. Just be steadfast in not eating the blood, because the blood is the life, and you shall not eat the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it. You shall just plain pour it out on the earth as water. You shall not eat it. Notice he keeps emphasizing this. You shall not eat it. No doubt about it. So that it may go well with you and with your children after you, when you shall do that which is right in the eyes of Yehoah. Only your holy things which you have, and your vows which you shall take, and go unto the place which Yehoah shall choose. And you shall offer your burnt offerings of flesh and the blood upon the altar of Yehuyarel, and the blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out against the altar of Yehuyarel, and you shall eat the flesh. Observe and hear all of these words, Deborim, which I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever. Haolam. When you do that which is good and right in the eyes of Yehuyarel. Now, when Yehuyarel shall cut off these nations, these goyim, before you, when you go in to possess and or dispossess them and possess their land, and you do that, and then you dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them after they're destroyed from before you. And here's the one that every time I read this, I just think, for crying out loud, this is the essence, folks, of what the whore church did for hundreds of years, centuries. Let's see, let's go take and we're going to claim we're going to Christianize these pagans. Yeah, we'll take all this pagan crap that he says over and over again that he hates. Don't do it. Don't ask how they do it. And we'll just Christianize it, and we'll make up some wonderful claims about how it fits, right? I've seen stuff on people's walls about, you name it, any pagan practices. Bunnies and eggs are not the limits. But here's what he has to say about it. Take heed you do not, that you are not ensnared, trying to follow them after the destroyed before you. And you do not inquire of their God, saying, oh, how did these nations, these goyim, these Gentiles, these pagans, how did they serve their gods? Even so, I will do likewise. Why? Because the whore pope commands me. He's the vicar of Christ. This is abomination, folks. Let's just not kid yourselves. Oh, Mark, are we being anti-Catholic? No, we're being anti-pagan. And if there are so-called fake religions that adopt paganism, well, we're going to find out in this Torah portion, he does not think or take kindly to it. Matter of fact, it carries a death penalty. We're going to see that. You shall not do so unto Yehuyarel, because every abomination against Yahuwah, which he hates, is this blunt enough? Which he hates, they have done to their gods, even their sons and gods and daughters, they burn in the fire to their gods. Molech, Baal, Lord. They've even taken his very name out and replaced it with the same name that's used to worship these pagan gods. Lord. Adon. Baal. All, he says. This is chapter 13, first verse. Or in some of the English Bibles, it's the last verse in chapter 12. But in either case, it's at the demarcation line of the chapter. And it's important. And it's the second time we've heard it. It's not going to be the last. Everything. All. Kol, aha, debar, all of this word which I command you, you shall observe to do. You shall not add thereto, you shall not subtract therefrom. Don't add to it, don't subtract from it. As a matter of fact, if you read the last book, it says you do that and he'll add to or subtract from, basically you give up that portion in the book of life. Don't do it. This is serious stuff. Don't add to and subtract from. Now, I will note, of course, and regulars have heard me talk about this for years, you read the indictments against the two whoring wives that later became Ahola and Aholibah when they were described prophetically by the prophets, but later became the northern tribes, the southern tribes, the whore church and the whore synagogue. Why? Because that's what they got good at. They added to and they subtracted from. Now, in fairness, the whore synagogue really loves to add to, whereas the whore church really loves to subtract from. But they both did each when it suited them, and they're still in exile for that reason to this day. So don't add to, don't subtract from. This is important stuff, and it is completely ignored. Matter of fact, you remember the whore church has basically just said, hey, that whole Old Testament, we're going to just subtract the whole thing pretty much. If there arises in the midst of you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, now notice what we're going to see here. Chapter 13 is one of the foremost indictments against idolatry in the book. And I've referenced before, it carries a death penalty. Oh yeah, when you read this and read the specifics, and not only does it carry a death penalty, it's like death underlined, emphasized, double exclamation point. So here we go. If there arises in the midst of you some so-called prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and that sign or wonder even comes to pass, the thing he spoke to you saying, let's go after other gods that you haven't known and let us serve them. Oh yeah, we'll see how they worship their gods. We'll do that, right? Baal, Lord. Well, it says, you shall not hearken to that word, that prophet or his words, or unto that dreamer of dreams, for Yehuyarel is testing you. He's putting you to the proof to know whether or not you really do love Yehuyarel with all your heart and with all your soul. It's an easy test. The whore church, the whore synagogue fail. Especially, though, those that add to and say, hey, we've got this fake God. He wears this funny fish hat. Oh, man. After Yehuyarel shall you walk, and him you shall fear, and his commandments you shall keep. Unto his voice shall you hearken, unto him you shall serve, and unto him you shall cleave. I don't care what kind of fancy vestments and garments they got on, what titles they give themselves, he is not having it. That prophet or that dreamer of dreams, he shall be put to death, because he has spoken perversion against Yehuyarel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of bondage to draw you aside out of. Now, this is an interesting turn of phrase. Listen carefully. To draw you aside out of the way which Yehuyarel commanded you to walk in. Now, remember, this is not something that's taught in most Sun God Day school, because they don't like this either. The early followers of the Messiah were not called Christians, folks. Christos was another one of those Greek words. They were followers of the Messiah, but more importantly, he was, remember this verse, the way, the truth, and the life. He was telling them to return to the way, the path that is narrow, few there be that find it. So, what is the verse here telling you? That prophet or dreamer of dreams that's trying to get you to be deceived, he is trying to draw you aside out of the way which Yehuyarel commanded you to walk. It's amazing how when you start to see the pieces and they fit together, you realize Jeremiah was right. We have inherited lies. So it says, you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. Now, how sincere, how important is this? He's going to emphasize it. Listen to this one. And as some places say in Scripture, hear, all Israel shall hear and fear. Basically, I'm going to put it in modern parlance the first time I go through this, and well, then we'll read it in the King James-ish here in a second. But it says, you know what? I don't care if it's your brother. I don't care if it's the son of your mother or son of your daughter, the wife of your very bosom or your friend that's kind of like your own soul. I don't care any of that stuff. If he comes to you or she and secretly says, let's go serve other gods, which you've not known, not you or your fathers, of the gods of the people that are round about you, nigh unto you, or far off from you, doesn't matter, from one end of the earth unto the other, you shall not consent to him, you shall not hearken him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare, nor shall you conceal him. Uh-oh. Hammer's getting ready to drop, it sounds like, right? But in fact, it says, you shall surely kill him. What? This is the God of the Bible saying, kill your brother, son of your mother, son of your father. That, kill him? Yep. Your hand shall be first upon him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all of the people. Can I say it again? This is serious stuff. And yet, folks, this is doctrine in the whore church. This is how the whore church, and yes, the whore synagogue both, have strayed from the path and merited, earned, the exile that they are still very much in. Why? Because they went after other fake gods. They added to, they subtracted from. Anything that was in here that he told them not to do, they did it. Now, the difference nowadays, you notice there's a word in here. If somebody comes to you secretly saying, let's go worship other gods, they don't say it secretly anymore. They say, let's go worship the Lord, a fake Lord, who did away with his own law and is a liar and the truth is not in him. One who basically, in his very first public address, said he's not changing it. They say he did, but that's okay. He's a fake. Let's go worship this one. Let's go after this fake God. And let's add the bunnies and the eggs and the Christmas trees, because he was born on December the 25th, you know, Mithra's birthday. They aren't hiding it anymore. The deception is kind of out in the open. It's just that they don't even pretend that they're still walking in the way which he commanded them to walk in. That's all done away with. That's Old Testament stuff. That, folks, is the biggest lie, I will argue, in the history of humankind. Again, doesn't matter who it is. I don't care if it's your son, your daughter, the wife of your bosom, the son of your mother, your own son. If it happens, destroy them. Don't even conceal them. You shall stone him with stones that he die, because he has sought to draw you away from Yahuwah Yireel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Well, what if he's got a funny fish hat on? What if he wears fine garments? What if he sells indulgences? What if he says he's the very vicar of Christ? Oh. Well, you see, we're so far from that, we don't care anymore. Because essentially what we've been told is, all this stuff's done away with. Isn't that convenient? Kind of reminds me of Fauci, doesn't it? All right, I commit crimes that were once called treason. Well, we're going to change the definition of the words. Change the definition of vaccine. Change the definition of gain of function. Change the definition of treason. And we're going to change the definition of what it means to be a pagan, an idolater, and to secretly entice you to worship other gods. What does it say next? Yeah, we've already alluded to this. And Kol Israel, the Kol Israel shall hear and shall fear, and shall do no more any such wickedness as this in the midst of you. Well, they heard, they ignored, they continued, they were warned, 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 and warned, and then they were exiled, and they died. And they're still in exile. If you hear tell concerning one of your cities, which Yahuwah has given you to dwell in, saying, you know, certain base fellows, sons of Belial, Benai Belial, Bel Elial, in other words, a fake god. Base fellows is not exactly the way it's rendered. Sons of Belial. Think of it as a lying L. How about that? That's a kind of a Hebrew-English rendering of something. But these are people that are doing something pretty gnarly that are... Well, they're doing essentially what the whore church has done for 17 centuries or more. Certain base fellows, sons of Belial, have gone out from the midst of you. They've drawn away the inhabitants of their city. Oh, maybe it's Rome, maybe it's Washington, maybe it's the swamp, maybe it's San Francisco. Pick a city, folks. You're going to play hell in the United States finding a cesspool city where this is not true. And they've said, let's go serve other gods, which you've not known. Well, what they say is, your God's not welcome here. We might bring in Muslims, and we might let the call to prayer be heard from 3:30 in the morning on and all that kind of stuff. We're fine with any God, except the God of the Bible. And I hear people say, well, they won't even allow the name of Jesus. Well, you know what? That name was never used. Not for 15-plus centuries. But the reason it's not allowed is because people might still think there's a connection. They would be wrong, because that Jesus that did away with the law is a fake too. But we have gone so far from this that you'll be hard-pressed finding a city where this isn't true. But read what he says anyway. So, these cities say, we don't like the God of the Bible. He's not welcome here. That part's easy. Let's go serve other gods. Maybe Allah. We like Allah better. We like paganism better. Pick a god. We like any of them better. Secular humanism, we like that one better too. So let's go serve these other gods. Pick one, which you've not known. Then you shall inquire, make a search, and ask diligently. You don't have to ask that hard. It's easy anymore. They'll come right out and tell you. And if it's true, the thing is made certain, that such abomination is in fact wrought in the midst of you, call to prayer, New York City, pick one. You shall surely smite the inhabitants of that city with lefi cherev, the mouth of the sword, destroying it utterly, and everything that's in it, and all the cattle too, with lefi cherev, the mouth of the sword. And you shall gather all the spoil. But you know what that would look like in the United States today, folks? I would be hard-pressed to think of a major cesspool city. I'm going to ask the assembled group here, online or off, can you think of a single city that wouldn't end up being an ash heap based on this? Here's what you're going to do. After you kill all the cattle and people in this thing, you gather the spoil to the midst of the broad place they're in, like maybe Central Park, let's say, or the Lakeshore Drive in Chicago, or probably maybe Candlestick Park or somewhere like that. There are plenty of places in L.A., you burn them with fire, the whole city, all the spoil, every whit unto Yahuwah, and it shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. He just leveled Manhattan, Chicago, Cleveland, New York, well, all of New York, most of New Jersey, all the way down the shore, the swamp, Baltimore, all the way south, Chicago again, you know, pick a city, go west, all the left coast. It's a heap forever. The only place left is the hinterlands in the U.S. that could be a city, because the rest of it says it shall not be built again. And there shall cleave nothing of the devoted thing to your hand. Devoted in this case means what? This is cherem, devoted to a fake god. Now, ironically, Silicon Valley is a place where it's all devoted to AI fake gods. That might be the place you start. Nothing of that devoted thing will cleave to your hand, so that Yahuwah might turn away from the fierceness of his anger and show you mercy and have compassion upon you and multiply you as he sworn to your fathers. When you shall hearken to the voice of Yahuwah your El to keep all kol of his commandments. What? You mean the ones that aren't done away with? The one that Jesus didn't do away with and nailed to the cross? To keep all of his commandments, which I command you this day, to do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah Yirel. Not the vicar of Christ, not a fake, not someone who did away with the law, nailed it to the cross, and is therefore a liar. His blood doesn't count for squat. The real Messiah, the real way, the real truth. He is Echad. He changes not. He's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. What he told us remains, and it still's true. The next verse brings it home. Chapter 14. You are the B'nai Le'Yahuwah, Yorel, Elohechem. You are the children of Yahuwah. You shall not cut yourselves. Now you notice I've mentioned this for the last several years. There has been for a long time in this country, and I'm sure most other major countries that are all pagan too, an epidemic of what is called cutting. Where kids cut themselves, pierce themselves, mark themselves, and basically do anything to say, I'm not of that. Whatever that is, I serve that other fake god. You shall not cut yourselves nor make any baldness between your eyes for the dead. And there's an irony there. They don't realize it's for the dead, but you watch, it's hard not to see. So obviously that's what it is. Because you're supposed to be, you are, he says, a set-apart people unto Yahuwah Yirel. And Yahuwah Yirel has chosen you to be his own treasure out of all the peoples upon the face of the earth. You shall not eat any abominable thing. Well, hell, that would close down about half the restaurants. Because that's what they serve, is abominable thing. How about a shrimp cocktail and the little pork surprise? These are the beasts which you may eat. The ox, in other words, cattle as we would say nowadays, the sheep and the goat. The hart, the gazelle, the roebuck, the wild goat, the piegarg, the antelope, and the mountain sheep. Animals that, well, we're going to find out. What do they have in common? They chew the cud, they have a split hoof. Every beast that parts the hoof and has the whole hoof wholly cloven in two, and, got to have both, and it chews the cud among the beasts, that is food that you may eat. Nevertheless, you shall not eat of them that only do one of those two things, but not both. So there's quite a bit of detail. This is, by the way, the second time. Again, this is a restatement, but it's important. And, of course, we're going to hear this is done away with, too. And I ask this question whenever I go through this. Anybody tells me, oh, well, now we can eat pig. It's okay. We have refrigeration. Does it say anything in here about refrigeration? Oh, that when you get a refrigerator, it's okay. You can eat that which I say is abomination. He says you're not to eat it. Not period. Now, does it say that on the day that Jesus dies on the cross, I'm going to change your stomach, I'm going to change pigs' flesh, I'm going to change their digestive system, and I'm going to change what they eat, and all of a sudden what was abomination is now okay? Did that happen? Let me be as kind as I can. Hell no. It didn't change. He didn't change. And, you know, you notice none of his disciples went out and said, hey, Jesus is dead, let's go have a pork sandwich. I'm not making light of this, folks. I'm derisively, disgustingly saying those that tell you that it's done away with are liars and the truth is not in them. They need to read John, see what he says about this. This is important. This is serious stuff. And don't think for a second a whole lot of people aren't already dying and going to die because they eat that which is abomination and destroy their immune systems. They open themselves up to all the diseases he's promised he wouldn't put upon you unless they do this, in which case they're going to deserve it. And by the way, you look at modern science and ask any decent nutritionist, they'll tell you this. Pig is not food. putrescine, cadaverine, those things that are in its enzymes in its body, they stay there after it's dead. They're bad for you. Don't put them in your body. The DNA allows the vermin, the bacteria, the things that would attack a pig to attack you, because the barrier to jumping the species is small. So let's go through it again. I think people probably by now understand this. The thing I want to emphasize, and the thing that I hope we can take out, I can't tell you, I have seen so many people over the years, they don't care about marriage, they don't care about Sun God Day, they don't even so much care about Christmas, but by God, you take away my pig, them's fighting words, dude! How dare you take away my sacred pig! I will die to eat my pig! Well, matter of fact, I guess that's a true statement. It's one of those things that when you finally begin to say, I think I start to see the light, it turns out it's not that hard to do what he says. But you would swear that people will die for it. And indeed they have, and they will continue to. And they'll kick you off. I can't tell you how many websites I've been kicked out of for daring to suggest that, are you saying they're going to go to hell, Mark? I say, no, I don't tell you they're going to go to hell. I'm just telling you wherever they're going sooner. All right, every beast that parts the hoof, and it has a hoof that is wholly cloven in two, and chews the cud among the beasts, that's food, you can eat it. However, you shall not eat of them that do one thing only, like only chew the cud, or only have a cloven hoof. The camel, the hare or bunny, the rock badger, because they chew the cud, but they do not have a cloven hoof. They're unclean to you, they're not food. The swine, on the other hand, he does have a cloven hoof, but he does not chew the cud. He is unclean to you. And listen to this. Notice that there's something different about the swine, the pig. And that's, I guess, obviously true. Most people don't get all that upset about not being able to eat rat or horse, but take away the pig and they're upset. All right? But the swine, the pig, he does not chew the cud. He's unclean. He's not food. Of their flesh you shall not eat. Well, that's obvious. And their carcasses you shall not even touch. Now, it's the only animal about which that is said. You have a dog that dies, you can bury your dog. But as far as the pig is concerned, you're not to touch the carcass. I guess that means you can't clean it, skin it, and then put it in a pork chop either. These you may eat of all that are in the waters. Anything that has fins and the scales. Again, the and, got to have both. It's food, you can eat it. But whatever has not got fins and scales, you shall not eat. It is unclean to you. That's pretty simple. So shellfish, not food. Oysters, clams, scallops, not food. Of all the clean birds, you may eat. Now, in the case of birds, we don't get a simple rule to determine what is food and what is not food. Over the years, I've suggested, and by the way, this is Markology. This is my take, pure and simple. It is not a rule. It's just a generalized indicator. But again, it's not a proof. There are certain birds that would seem obviously to be unclean, and the list makes that clear here. Those are birds of prey, birds that eat other things. That, by the way, at least is similar to the carrion eaters on the land, which are pigs, and the carrion eaters in the ocean, which is shellfish. So you got your vulture, your great vulture, your bearded vulture, the osprey, the gleed, the kite, the falcon, even the raven after its kinds. So that would fit. The eagle, some other birds that are listed here. The little owl, the great owl, the horned owl. All right. Now, where we end up with the list, and the list is kind of interesting, there are even a couple items in this list that admittedly, I'll admit, it's not always clear exactly what the animal is when we translate it from the Hebrew. And there is some debate about some of these animals, because one of the items on the list is the ostrich. Now, the ostrich will eat almost anything, and they do seem to eat carrion, so maybe that's true. But anyway, the ostrich is on the list, some Bible translations, not all. And So I'm not sure. I think the word that's translated as ostrich is the bot there, which doesn't, it's an unusual word, right? It's the same word as sister, and I don't see that rendering here. So anyway, the point is, there are some animals on some of these lists where you always kind of got to scratch your head and say, Maybe we're not 100% sure. But the nighthawk, the sea mew, the hawk after its kind, I mentioned the owls, the pelican, carrion vulture, cormorant, stork, heron, the hoopoe, and the bat. Now, bats, of course, but most animal types today would say, well, that's in a different family. It's kind of like a winged rat, but obviously not food either way. All the winged swarming things that are unclean unto you, you shall not eat them. They're not food. Of all clean winged things you may eat. Okay, so the grasshopper and the locust, we've seen those lists before. You may not eat of anything that dies by itself, what I've joked about and referred to as roadkill. But really, it could be that they just go off by themselves and die because they're sick. Maybe they're old. But regardless, if it's dead by itself, you can give it to the stranger that's within your gates. You know, Mikey likes it. He'll eat anything. But you are not to eat it. You can sell it to a foreigner because you are a set apart people unto Yehuah-Yireh. You shall not see the kid in its mother's milk. That's where they get the separation of milk and dairy. And I'll admit, I understand the logic, but I don't agree with it. You shall surely tithe all the increase of your seed, which is brought forth in the field year by year. And you shall eat before Yehuah-Yireh in the place which he chooses to put his name or cause his name to dwell there, the tithe of your corn and your wine and your oil, the firstlings of your herd and of your flock, that you may learn to fear Yehuah-Yireh always. And if the way is too long for you so that you're not able to carry it because the place is too far away, which Yehuah-Yireh chooses to put his name, when Yehuah-Yireh shall bless you, then you can turn it into kesef. In other words, you sell what you got, and you sell it for kesef, silver, and then you bind that up, the silver in your hand, and you go to the place where Yehuah-Yireh shall choose. And there, you can use that silver to buy whatever it is you want, whatever your soul desires, it says. Oxen or sheep or wine or strong drink even. Oh, some of the horse church will tell you you can't do that. Well, the Creator says otherwise. Or for whatever your soul asks of you, you shall eat there before Yehuah-Yireh, and you shall, ready? Here it comes, rejoice, you and your household. And the Levite that's within your gates, don't forsake him, because he has no portion or inheritance with you. At the end of every 3 years, even in the same year, you shall bring forth all the tithe of your increase, lay it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow within your gates, they all can come. And they'll eat and be satisfied that Yehuah-Yireh may bless you in the work, all of the work of your hands, which you do. Now, the next chapter says at the end of every 7 years, you make a release. This is the manner of that release. Every creditor shall release what he has lent unto his neighbor. He does not exact it of his neighbor nor his brother because Yehuah's release has been proclaimed. So this is the Shemitah year. Of the foreigner, which is basically just another word for seven. Of the foreigner, you may exact it, but whatsoever of yours is with your brother, your hand shall release. Howbeit, there shall be no needy among you, for Yehuah-Yireh will surely bless you in the land which Yehuah-Yireh gives you for an inheritance possess it. If, here it is, this word is im, if you diligently hearken unto the voice of Yehuah-Yireh to observe to do all this commandment which I command you this day. For Yehuah-Yireh will bless you as he's promised you, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. And you shall rule over many nations. Again, the word is goyim, but they shall not rule over you. If there is among you a needy man, one of your brethren, within any of your gates, in the land which Yehuah-Yireh gives you, you shall not harden your heart, nor shut your hand from your needy brother, but you shall surely open your hand to him, lend him sufficient for his needs in that which he wants. And that doesn't mean that he just wants a new Mercedes. It means he is lacking something. Beware, though, that they're not a base thought in your heart saying, uh-oh, we're coming up on the seventh year, that year of release, and that's nearby. And as a result, your eye would be evil against your needy brother, and you don't give him anything. And he cries out unto Yehuah against you, and it shall be sin unto you. You shall surely give him. Your heart shall not be grieved when you give unto him, because that, for this thing, Yehuah-Yireh will bless you in all your work and in all that you put your hand to. In other words, he'll bless you. Don't worry about it. For the poor shall never cease out of the land. Now you notice Yeshua quotes this part. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall surely open your hand to the poor and your needy brother in the land. If your brother, an Ivri, a Hebrew, or a Hebrew woman, so either sex, is sold unto you, he shall serve you for 6 years. These are all things that we've heard before, but they merit repetition. Seventh year, you shall let him go for free. Doesn't owe you silver. He doesn't have to pay back. He's already paid it back. Now, when you let him go from you, you shall not let him go out empty-handed. You shall, in fact, furnish him liberally out of your flock, out of your threshing floor, out of your wine press, because whatever Yehuahirel has blessed you with, and then you shall give of that unto him. And you shall remember, you too were a bondsman in the land of Egypt, and Yehuahirel redeemed you. Therefore, I command you to do this thing this day. And it shall be, if he says unto you, I won't go out from you, because he loves you and your house, because he has fared well with your house. And by the way, this is a repetition of Exodus chapter 21. Remember, this is the action with the awl. You take an awl, okay, a pointy thing, a pointed metal object, and you thrust it through his ear into the doorpost of the house, and he shall be your bondsman forever. And also unto your bondswoman you shall do likewise. Now, again, the midrash on this one is interesting, because we tend to look at this from a quote-unquote modern viewpoint and say, oh, this is great. You're such a wonderful master. This slave is kind of addicted to being a slave. He wants to stay one forever. Isn't that nice? And essentially, the midrash says, no, it's not. You failed. Because while you may have treated him well and he thinks it's better than the option, he is not able to go out. You're supposed to basically train him to be somebody who is able to be a free citizen, to stand up and do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah, and you failed him. He wants to be a slave. He did not learn the lesson. All right. It shall not seem hard to you, though, when you do let him go free from you, for to the double of the hire of a hireling, he served you 6 years. In other words, he has been faithful to you. What's your rightful obligation? Yehuahirel will bless you in all that you do. Now, all the firstling males that are born of your herd, out of your flock, you shall set apart unto Yehuahirel. You shall do no work with the firstling of your ox, nor with the firstling of your flock. They're set apart to him. You shall eat it before Yehuahirel, year by year, in the place which Yehuah shall choose, you and your household. And if there's any blemish, or any lameness, or blindness, any ill whatsoever, you shall not sacrifice that unto Yehuahirel. You shall eat it within your gates. The unclean and the clean alike may eat of it, as the gazelle and as the hart. Only, remember, you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it out upon the ground as water. Finally, this one. And we're not going to read the whole chapter. We're going to read part of it. And this is yet another place where, isn't there an interesting kind of a continuation in here? All of the things that Yahuwah says, these are mine, these are things that are important, do them or don't do them. This entire Torah portion is just filled with things that the whore church says, oh, no, we don't like those things. We especially don't like that part about the fake gods that we've raised up and used to replace him, and we've changed the worship he commands, and we've put in these fakes instead. We like our bunnies and eggs on our Christmas trees better. We didn't tear down the Asherim, the pillars. No, we raised them up. In Rome, they didn't tear down the idols. They renamed them after so-called Christian saints. Isn't that amazing? Now we're going to see in chapter 16 his appointed times. Notice again, these are the appointed times of Yod Heh Vav Heh, not Jewish feasts, and certainly not pagan feasts. Observe, he says, the month of Abib, and keep the Pesach unto Yahuwah, your El. For in the month of Abib, Yahuwah your El brought you out of Egypt by night. And you shall sacrifice the Pesach, the Passover offering, unto Yahuwah, your El, out of the flock and the herd, in the place which Yahuwah shall cause his name to dwell there. He chooses this place. You shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you eat unleavened bread therewith, even the bread of affliction, because in haste you came forth out of the land of Egypt, so that you may remember the day when you came forth out of the land of Egypt for all of the days of your life. It's not even taught in Sun God Day School much. And certainly they're not told that this Passover is a Christian thing. No, it's a Yah thing. It's his thing. There shall be no leaven seen with you in all your borders 7 days, nor shall any of your flesh, when you sacrifice the first day at evening, remain all night until morning. You may not sacrifice the Passover offering with any of your gates, which Yehuahirel gives you, but at the place where Yehuahirel shall cause his name to dwell, there you shall sacrifice the Pesach offering at evening, with the going down of the sun, at the season when you came forth out of Egypt. Now that's interesting. What happens if we don't have the place? Because he took it away for cause. answer. You cannot do that. He says you can't. It does not mean we cannot remember it and honor what he says to keep forever anyway. That's the important distinction here. You shall, in fact, roast it and eat it in a place where Yahuwah your all chooses, and you turn it, turn in the morning and go to your tents. 6 days you eat unleavened bread. On the seventh day is a solemn assembly unto Yahuwah your all. Do no work therein. 7 weeks you then number unto yourself. From the time that the sickle is first put to the standing corn, you begin to number 7 weeks. So here's your 7 times 7 plus 1, the 50 days to Shavuot. Some think Pentecost, because there's the number 50 embedded in there. But it's the last of the spring feasts. You shall keep the Feast of Weeks, as it's also called, unto Yahuwah your El, after the measure of the freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give according to Yahuwah and how he blesses you. And here it is again. And you shall rejoice before Yahuwah your El, you, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, the Levites within your gates, and the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, all that are in the midst of you, in the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. And you shall remember you were a bondsman in Egypt, and you shall observe and do these statutes. Then it says you shall keep the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot, 7 days, after you've gathered in from your threshing floor and from your winepress. And you shall rejoice, here it is again, Sameach, the same root word, means joy or rejoice. In the feast, you and your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow that's within your gates. Again, basically, all of these folks. 7 days you keep that feast unto Yahuwah your El, in the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose, because Yahuwah your El shall bless you in all your increase and in all the work of your hands, and you shall be altogether, right, joyful. Smach. 3 times in a year. So these are the Feasts of Ascension, you'll also hear them called. All your males shall appear before Yahuwah in the place which he shall choose. On the Feast of Unleavened Bread, on the Feast of Weeks, and on the Feast of Tabernacles. So Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. And you shall not appear before Yahuwah empty-handed. For every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of Yahuwah, which he has given you. Now, with that, the Torah portion ends, and we're going to see some other things that are also ignored next time. But again, if there's a single thing I hope folks will take away from this, maybe it's not a single thing. It's a combination of things that all work together. It's that he didn't change it. He has given us instruction. You're not to add to it nor subtract from it. You notice how much of this, if you've been raised in Sun God Day School, has been not only subtracted from, pretty much done away with. They'll tell you. We don't do that anymore. Them are Jewish things. Wrong. Those are his things. And furthermore, he hates the changes. He hates the things that have been used to replace what he says to do with things he says unequivocally don't do. Don't ask how these people worship their gods and do likewise. For crying out loud, don't take the things that I said to do, replace them with pagan things, and think that makes me happy. So there we are, and with that, I'll ask, do we have any questions or comments on any of this? Let's see here. And anything that I missed? I see the comment that they're not important to modern Christianity, they're just important to him. I couldn't agree more. That's exactly right. And it's, you're right, it's a head-scratcher, but it's more than sad. And it's part and parcel of the very reason why I encourage folks, you know, read it, pick it up, read Ezekiel 23, read Jeremiah 3, see the connections, and understand why it is that he refers to backsliding Israel as a whore, because that is precisely the definition. It's idolatry, it's adultery, and it's a slap in the face to the father.